From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for July 23rd, 2021. Your Milwaukee Brewers are home this weekend with the Chicago White Sox, and your Milwaukee Bucks are still the NBA champs. Stop the presses, Wisconsin, the cheese capital of the planet, doesn't have an official state cheese. We annually produce 3.5 billion pounds of cheese, so the obvious choice for the official state cheese is the foam one that you wear on your head. A New Zealand Employers Association argues there's danger in too many people having jobs. Of course, that's easy for them to say since they all have jobs. According to biologists, there are 6 people on the planet that look exactly like you. And all this time, I thought I was special. Hey, people actually spent time answering this public opinion poll. Iceland surveyed their citizens if they would prefer a 36-hour work week over a 40-hour work week. Do I need to tell you the results? How about 99% to 1? So the question is, what's up with that 1%? We all know the internet is not a safe place to play. Remember when we were eating Tide laundry pods? Some of those knuckleheads are now whitening their teeth with Mr. Clean's magic eraser. I think this is called thinning the herd. And finally, our headline of the week from the London Times. British police want the power to ban soccer fans from snorting cocaine at the games. And they say soccer isn't a real sport. On the podcast today, we have Kyle Tedding, Art Rothschild, Joel Driesing, and wrapping up the week, here's Bob Landis.
Thanks, Max. Good to be back. Well, we had a pretty good rebound after the sell-off on Monday. NASDAQ climbed 2.8% this week, tacking on 410 points. Closed today at 14,837. S&P 500 added 2%, up 85 points. Closed at 4412. Dow Jones Industrial Average up 1.1%, tacking on 374 points. Dow closed at 35,062. 10-year Treasury, after peaking out at 1.75% in March, now down to 1.29%. Max, that's a quick look at the week in review. You know, Kyle, pretty ugly Monday. Dow fell over 700 points. Pretty good concerns about the Delta variant. Now 85% of new infections are from the Delta variant. The vast majority of new infections are coming from states that have very low vaccination rates. Maybe they'll get the message to get vaccinated. And within 24 hours, the street kind of forgot about it. Delta what? And it was back to the races again.
Yeah, you know, Bob, I think I'm so excited to jump in again and talk about this because it's amazing how quickly markets recovered. We had the worst day in 8 months for the Dow, and all of a sudden we're talking about record numbers again or near record numbers again for, you know, all three of the major indexes. And so I think you look at just what really has been the driving force behind a lot of the recent rallies. It isn't institutional money. It isn't any of the big hedge fund players. It's largely been retail investors. You look at more than $1 trillion sitting in cash in brokerage accounts out there, and that number is something like $400 billion more than what was out there 5 years ago. And so I think what we have seen is that investors are awash with cash, and especially smaller investors are awash with cash, and they're looking for every opportunity to get a little bit of a deal. Now, granted, 2.1% down in a single day isn't all that great of a deal, but I think what we're seeing is they're just trying to find places to put cash to work.
You know, Kyle, what's also impressive is that we've had record inflows to municipal bond mutual funds this year. Record. I mean, since they started tracking it, it's the most money's ever gone into muni bond funds. So it's not just retail chasing stocks. It's a whole lot of money going into municipals. I like municipals at this point in time. You take a look at corporates, flat to negative for the year. Munis are positive. The broad national muni funds are up 1.6, 1.7 for the year, and the prospect for the higher income folks of paying higher tax rates, municipals offer a bargain. You know, Kyle, I saw in the Wall Street Journal recently that when investor sentiment is so bullish, it's a sign sometimes to sell, and that certainly hasn't been the case this year. I look at the markets, you know, for 7 months, up as high as they are, you know, the S&P year to date up almost 16%. You know, that's a big number. And the fact that stocks potentially could keep climbing. I look at earnings. You know, earnings expectations for next year coming down just a little bit. We had been talking about 12% increase in profits for next year. Numbers down, thanks to Joel here. I saw the latest down a little under 11%. Still a pretty good number on an annual basis. But what got my attention when I was looking at it is the forward PE now is down to 21. And, you know, earnings for this year are 14% higher than what they thought from the beginning of the year. We've only had, as you know, a fifth of the S&P companies announce results, but the vast majority beat expectations. So that tells me that we're maybe borrowing a little bit this year from next year, that earnings are climbing. But I was most interested in the guidance numbers. And folks, what we're talking about here is it's kind of interesting to see the results, but most of us are focused on what the companies think of their potential results for the rest of the year and next year. And guidance numbers have been pretty strong as well.
Yeah, you know, I think you hit the nail on the head when you talk about borrowing from future rates of growth by getting a little bit more growth this year. And we've seen that in economic growth. We've seen that in kind of forecasts for where things are headed for earnings. Certainly, when you raise the base rate, when you raise the base effect, as we've called it when we look at inflation, but when the starting number is higher, the year-to-year growth number looks less attractive. And so if there's one reason why you want next year's growth to look a little worse than you otherwise would have expected, it's because this year's been as good as it has. And so I think, you know, we're changing those numbers for the right reason. You add in the fact that, you know, expectations for the next couple of years still look pretty robust. And finally, I think that the biggest thing we have going for us right now is that the supply shortages that so many people have talked about as a cause for inflationary concerns also mean that inventory build hasn't been a problem. And so you'll see in a lot of manufacturing, you'll see in GDP reports as time goes on that a rebuilding of some inventory might help to boost especially manufacturers' earnings as we look out into next year and beyond. And so I think, you know, some of the very issues that we're dealing with right now, some of the very things that have been cause for concern, I think actually set up fairly nicely for a pretty sustainable growth rate as we look beyond just, you know, the next couple of quarters.
Kyle, I'm pretty convinced at this point that the inflation pressures that we've seen this past winter are transitory. You and I have talked about this at length. You know, earlier this winter, we weren't quite sure. And now, you know, you look back and you go, yeah, it's pretty unlikely that used car prices are going to jump 10% a month. Theoretically, they can't keep that up. Car rental companies sold their fleets March of 2020. Their timing was terrible. The chip shortage, part of it created by the prior administration, didn't help things at all. But nobody seriously thinks that used car prices are going to jump 10% a month. Lumber's already come way down in price. So a lot of it appears to be transitory. And as I've told people for decades, you know, the canary in the coal mine for inflation is, in my opinion, the 10-year treasury yield that it peaked at 1.75, as I said a minute ago, and, you know, now down, it even hit 1.18 for a little bit on Monday to, you know, finish up a little under 1.3% for the week. But the point is, it looks to me that the street is digesting that growth may have peaked out this last month or so. And I think that's good news, because what you really want is growth that's sustainable, that it's reliable, that it's capable of growing gradually. What you don't want is an economy on fire where, you know, you call the fire trucks, you got to put out the fire. You don't want that. So the fact that it looks to me that market mentality has shifted from worrying about inflation to now where it's shifting to, hey, maybe growth peaked out this last month or so. You know, we won't know that for a couple of months yet, but I'm going with what the 10-year Treasury is telling me. The 10-year is telling me that inflation isn't the concern that some had suggested earlier this year. The 10-year yield, having come way down, is telling me that, you know, maybe economic growth has peaked short term, and that a year or two from now, you know, we're not going to be worried about much higher interest rates, much higher inflation rates, but we potentially could worry a little bit about growth.
Yeah, I think that benchmark 10-year Treasury really does tell you where the market thinks risk is right now. And, you know, they're not seeing risk as that substantial toward inflation. They're seeing risk as what happens if the Delta variant surges further, what happens if we have continued impacts to growth in other areas. And so I think, yeah, inflation is always that thing that's going to be out there that could potentially be a problem if we can't get a handle on any number of other things. I think what we're still seeing is that it pops up in a couple of areas here or there on a month-to-month, quarter-to-quarter basis, and then it settles back down, as we've seen, as you rightfully point out, in lumber prices, as we've seen in used car prices, already starting to slow from where they were. I think the reality, of course, is that economic growth is the thing we need. Accompanied by a little bit of inflation, that's healthy. Accompanied by a lot of inflation, now we have some questions about what the Fed's going to do. And so the Fed already is next week scheduled to talk about tapering, pulling back on the $80 billion in Treasury purchases and $40 billion in mortgage purchases that are occurring each month. And I think there's a healthy amount of talk that can happen there without really fear of slowing down the progress we've made economically. And so, you know, I do think the 10-year is the thing to continue to keep an eye on. I think the Fed's been incredibly transparent upon what they think the risks are to the economy. And candidly, I think, you know, we've seen the language change reflective of how the risk has changed. And so, you know, you do see some Fed governors talking about being more concerned about inflation in certain areas, but that word transitory still shows up pretty regularly. And so I do think important to point out that while we have seen some concerns there, you know, I don't think those concerns are long-term what the market is really indicating the problems might be.
Art, let's switch to you for a little bit here. What's your take on current events?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. We've had this tremendous resurgence this week from the first week, I think, in four. The stocks went down last week and then a disastrous Monday. Generally speaking, I think we're in a good place. National Bureau of Economic Research officially declared that the recession, which just started in February, ended in April. It was the shortest recession in history. So we're in the beginning stages, I think, of an economic expansion. And I think it'll continue very likely. We've got some hurdles to overcome. Old saying on Wall Street, bull market climbs a wall of worry. And as Kyle just mentioned, one worry the market has is how quickly the Fed is going to taper, and then when they're going to start, you know, raising interest rates. The fact they're discussing it could spook the markets a little bit. Debt ceiling. By the end of the month, Congress has to decide, you know, to raise the debt ceiling. Let's hope they do. Back in 2011, when they didn't, stocks dropped 19%. So we have to be cognizant of things to be concerned about. And, of course, as you mentioned earlier, the Delta variant. I mean, that could pose further problems or other variants if we can't get this virus completely locked down. But the bottom line is, expansions don't just die overnight, and there's typically reasons why they do. And because we're just at the beginning of this expansion, and even though the rate of growth of earnings is likely going to slow, that doesn't mean that the economy's not going to grow. So I expect the economy to continue to grow, possibly for years. And as Kyle pointed out, there's no place else to put money where you're going to make some other than cryptocurrencies or meme stocks, and I'm not going to put money there. And bonds, quite frankly, continue to be a safe haven. And so we continue to use those to provide stability, you know, to portfolios. So I feel pretty good about where we are and where we're going.
Another wild card out there, Art, as you know, is the infrastructure bill. Probably never been a better time for the U.S. government to borrow money with interest rates so low. We're financing the national debt now way below 1%. And, you know, a little bit of math on the back of the envelope, roughly a $22 trillion economy in the United States. Last time I looked, they're talking almost $5 trillion for infrastructure spending. You know, that's 22% of GDP. It's a big number. And unlike stimulus spending, where the money was spent within days of receipt, the infrastructure spending tends to have a longer shelf life, tends to enhance GDP 2, 3, 4 years or more out into the future. So, you know, it'd be interesting to keep our eyes on the infrastructure bill and how that'll give, I think, a needed boost to the economy, rebuild bridges and roads that are falling apart, even a couple of grade schools here and there. Seems to me to be money well spent. Joel, let's switch to you. Handful of pretty interesting economic indicators for the week.
Yeah, Bob, it's all showing, you know, kind of what we've been talking about, and that's that the economy's growing, it's continuing to grow. It's still not all the way, you know, firing on all cylinders. And, you know, Art pointed out the shortness of the recession and that an expansion has begun. It actually was a year ago that, I mean, it's kind of hard to lose track of, easy to lose track of all this time, but, you know, that expansion started in April of 2020, and we're 15, 16, 17, 18 months into the next expansion. I was actually looking at what the National Bureau of Economic Researchers looked at, some of the variables that they looked at to declare that recession over, and half of them are now already past their marks before the last recession. Now, some key ones are not. GDP is still a little less than 1% behind where the peak before the recession, but it took, in the Great Recession, it took 3 years to get back up there, and we're within, you know, less than 1% away. And then employment, so, you know, that's an important one, so we're still waiting for that to catch up, and that could take another year from a lot of forecasts. And then the third one was industrial production. But, you know, some of the things we're talking about, supply shortages, I mean, those are the sorts of things that goose production. You know, when you're talking about shortages and higher prices and greater demand, that tends to help the growth even further.
Joel, I was interested in the Conference Board's release of their leading indicators. And, you know, one of the conclusions of the report said that GDP could be 6.6% real GDP this year. That's a big number. And perhaps even as high as 3.8% for next year. And I think the point that needs to be made here is that 3.8% is double what we've seen for the annual increase for the last 10 years.
Right, and that 6.6% would be the biggest since 1984, I believe. So that's, you know, near historic stuff going on. Yeah, and those indicators, the Conference Board looks at, you know, 10 different economic indicators, and only two of them were off between May and June, and that was housing permits and average work week. So they're saying that even though their index is increasing at a less rate than, you know, a couple of months ago, that they're still seeing really good growth in the economy.
Kyle, as you know, the dollar has been very strong this year. Typically, we see a strong dollar one of two reasons. The U.S. economy is doing better than the rest of the world, or when the world is struggling and the U.S. dollar becomes a safe haven. You know, right now, clearly, investors are concerned about the Delta variant, so money is kind of still pouring into the U.S. And I say this by way of saying that, you know, for those of us that invest money, a stronger dollar makes it a little bit more challenging to make money overseas, but it's unlikely that that's going to continue, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think what's interesting about that conversation is that Europe and much of the rest of the world has lagged the U.S. in the economic recovery. So you go back to the Great Financial Crisis, Europe and much of the rest of the world lagged significantly, actually went through double dip recessions in much of the rest of the world as the U.S. recovered. This time around, Europe may be a quarter or two behind still. We just saw a release this morning from IHS Markit looking at European purchasing managers, talking about how the European economy saw its highest rate of growth in 20 years, potentially, just this last month. And I think that points to a European market that maybe in the third quarter will finally start to get back to where the U.S. was in the first and second quarter of this year. And so I think, you know, the short-term challenge has been that the U.S. was clearly far ahead of much of the rest of the world in terms of getting vaccinated, in terms of being a safe haven. While the world was concerned about what was happening with the virus, I think the further along we can go, the more confidence we can instill in investors that other parts of the world have recovered. I think, you know, it sets up nicely for investors from the U.S. looking to other areas of the world, A, because there's some pretty good deals out there, and B, because the strength of the dollar that has persisted may finally start to weaken a bit. And then you've got really two things working for you as a U.S. investor. One, that your dollar now becomes a little bit less strong relative to other currencies. That helps your returns. Two is that you bought in at a pretty good time. Now, again, I think, you know, the U.S. has plenty of runway for growth. But if you're talking about where you can find a better value, I think you look outside the U.S. right now and there's some pretty good deals to be had.
And as you know, there's a lot of debt outside the United States that's denominated in dollars. So when the dollar strengthens, it's harder to pay that back. So you get the flip side. The dollar eventually starts weakening. It's easier for these folks to pay back dollar-denominated debt, giving their earnings a boost and arguing again for international investing. Well, folks, that's the end of yet another Money Talk. Thanks for listening. Happy birthday, Max.
Thank you.
Happy birthday to myself.
Happy birthday.
This weekend. Can't watch basketball anymore, Max, for a while.
It's, well, you can watch it in the Olympics now.
Yeah.
The Olympics, yeah, there we go.
Well, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you next week. Bye.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.